Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil. Bellerín, qué golazo.
Magnífico.
Gol. Qué golazo de Bellerín. Gol del Arsenal. Gran gol de Bellerín, 1-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's a bit of a strange morning because things haven't been working according to plan from a technical point of view. The system that we normally use to record the Arscast Extra, it doesn't seem to be working, so we're kind of on Skype.
We are. It's old school.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a bit like going back to driving your old Ford Escort after you upgrade to a Lamborghini or something like that. Not that I have a Lamborghini or...
No, but I imagine that that's what that regression would feel like.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also some noise issues. There's a lorry. It's not the usual lorry.
It's not the usual lorry. This one, instead of its sort of salutary beep, it's just in a steady growl outside the window.
Right. What is going to happen when the real lorry comes along and finds that another lorry is in his space? Is there going to be a lorry off?
I think so. All hell's going to break loose, yeah.
Right.
And it's a very narrow road, so that'll be interesting to observe.
Yeah. Well, look,
stay tuned,
wars.
Guys.
How was your weekend? All that technical hoo-ha aside, how was your weekend?
It was good, thanks. I had the fire brigade come out here. That was exciting.
Why?
Well, it wasn't to my flat. Basically, I was in my flat, and I could hear... yes, I could hear.
That's that thing you do with your ears.
Yeah, it goes in the ears and then, right. I could hear a fire alarm or smoke alarm going off, and I left it for some time. I was like, well, don't worry about it. But after about 50 minutes or so, I thought I'd better go and check.
That's sufficient time for anybody affected by that alarm going off to be burned to a crisp. I mean,
sure.
What was your rationale there after 50 minutes?
My rationale was that there has been a faulty alarm in the building recently, and I was like, well, it's just that one again. But then I suddenly thought, right, it hasn't turned off this time. But I mean, it's too late, someone's probably dead, but I'm going to go and check, do the neighbourly thing. So I went round, and there was no answer from the flat. But I was banging on the door, no one in there. I was like, oh, shit, I have killed him. And just by, you know, my inaction. But there was a sort of smell, vague smell of burning. So I rang. I was like, is this an emergency? I was like, it probably is. So I rang. Anyway, I rang the local police. I was like, they'll know what to do. And they said, we're sending everyone. We're sending fire engines, police support. They kept asking me, is he in there? And I was like, I don't even know who he is. I have no idea. And they just said, is he in there? We've got to get him out. So they all turned up, knocked the door down.
They knocked the door down?
Yeah, yeah. Very. Wow. I mean, I haven't owned up to him that it was me who made this call. But anyway, they knocked the door down, and it transpired the flat was empty but had a pan on the hob or whatever. That was still on. So it was a fire risk, but there was no fire. Anyway, he then emerged from another flat with a sort of scantily clad woman, saying that he'd been busy helping her move some furniture.
There's a euphemism in
that. Exactly.
Helping her move some furniture.
I know. I mean, I was like, he must have been pretty busy to have not thought, shall I check on my flat or should I just let it burn down? So there you go. So that was my weekend excitement. How's your weekend?
Well, not anywhere near as exciting as that, to be honest.
I wonder, was it John? Yeah.
From last week.
It could well have been his dilemma. But I basically, when all the fire brigade came and things like that, I didn't want to sort of be like, guys, I'm the one who came and got them to knock the door down. So I was sort of wandering around like in disguise, pretending to be a passerby, just like idling up to a fireman and going like, Everything all right, mate? No fire, or you know, just trying to find out what's going on without giving away my role.
What could be happening here? I certainly have no part to play in this.
It was very much that vibe. I even had a hood up. It was.
Well, that's not suspicious at all.
I mean, round my way, it's just uniform, to be honest with you. But so that was exciting. But
that really was, yeah.
As was Wembley.
Was Wembley exciting though?
It was. I'll tell you why.
Go on.
Because I was in the press seats, and an unspecified point in the game, a woman came round with a tray of sausage rolls. Now, try telling me that's not exciting.
Look, the life of a writer is a difficult one at the best of times.
There was ketchup, there was mustard.
I don't like ketchup on sausage rolls.
I don't either, to be honest.
I just like the sausage roll kind of... I prefer them cold as well to hot.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you would have been furious. You would have pushed this woman's tray up in the air and stormed out of Wembley.
How dare you heat these things through?
Yeah, so it's no longer the prawn sandwich brigade. It's the warm sausage roll with mustard brigade.
Right, well, that was pretty exciting. I guess more exciting than the football to a certain extent. What is it about Arsenal and Wembley recently? I mean, do we love it so much that we just want to stay out on the pitch as long as we possibly can?
I don't know. Or do we sort of hate it so much that we can never really play particularly well? Community Shield aside, where we were pretty good. But, yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I think I said before the game, you know, if this match is anything like the last semi-final, it'll be hellish. But it shouldn't be. And yet... it was.
Yes.
We made very, very hard work of it. And Reading, you know, really overperformed, I think, against expectations. I thought they, you know, they could, without wanting to be too patronising, they could be very proud of what they did out there. And Arsenal really struggled for any kind of fluency.
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, I thought having scored relatively shortly before the halftime break that we might then go on in the second half and kick on, but... you know, Reading came out, they played very well. I think I remember writing something on the live blog in the opening minutes of the second half that this was a good spell from Reading, a bright start to the half for them, and then, bam, they score a goal. And, you know, it was... I think Arsenal did more than enough to win overall when you look at it in general terms. You know, hitting the post, Ramsey should have scored that one, in fairness. There were other chances. Keeper made a brilliant save from Gabriel. That header was a fantastic save.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were moments where it was, I won't say touch and go, but a better team, perhaps, with better quality players, could probably have done us a bit more damage.
Yeah, there were a couple of sort of breaks where they had kind of 2-on-2 or 2-on-3, you know, something like that. And I think on both occasions it was Pavel Progrebniak, or whatever it is. That was close enough.
It is, yeah.
Progrebniak, charging at our defence with the ball. And you kind of feel that, you know, you were kind of glad it was him. You know, he didn't necessarily have the pace to go beyond his man or the wherewithal to pick the right pass. But had they taken better advantage of those opportunities, we would have been in big, big trouble. And I think from about the sort of 70-minute mark, really, it felt like the game could go either way.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of terrifying on reflection.
It is, but then it's also a semi-final. There's an element of pressure and expectation. You know, we're doing just enough in these semi-finals to warrant the tag of favourites and to deal with that pressure and expectation. But, you know, I think we spoke in the Arscast on Friday with Andrew and Gunnar Hollick about how it felt different this year, that the pressure that was evident last season, because so much hinged on the semi-final and so much hinged on us finally winning a trophy after the title campaign stuttered to a halt, that you thought, well, look, this season is going to be a bit different because, well, we're going to go there, we've won the FA Cup, we're in great form, we've won 8 out of 8, playing very well, we've just smashed Liverpool 4-1, even though we're a little bit more, found it a bit more difficult against Burnley, but that was away from home on a not such a good pitch, and look, here we are in London, and look, it's going to be on, and it was a bit more of the same. So I think possibly there was something of the occasion that played a part in that. How much do you think the team changes imbalanced us or contributed to the lack of performance? Because I thought, and I mentioned it on the blog, that I thought he might make the changes, the exact changes that he made, with Debuchy and Gibbs coming in and Welbeck coming in, because it felt like it wouldn't necessarily imbalance us that much. But I thought they those decisions played a big part in our performance.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week, and we sort of decided that, you know, those were the areas where rotation was possible, with the exception of the goalkeeper, because they allowed you to retain, you know, the central midfield, the hub of the side. It didn't seem like it'd be a massive problem. I think it was. I think we looked a long way off what we have been in this recent run. And I'm a fan of Danny Welbeck, but I think a lot of that was to do with the exclusion of Olivier Giroud. I think that the team have become very accustomed to playing with him as centre forward. Mm. He enables you to do certain things, you know, play certain passes into feet, into his chest, which Welbeck doesn't necessarily offer. Welbeck's a guy, he showed it in the first couple of minutes of the game, who wants to run in behind, wants to go through in on goal, you know, race central defenders one-on-one, yeah, which Giroud doesn't do. And so I kind of felt like the likes of Ozil, Cazorla, Ramsey have developed this style of play with Giroud as a focal point and a fulcrum to operate around. When you took him out, it felt like there was indecision and lack of clarity about what our attacking plan was. And that's actually not so much a criticism of Welbeck. I just think he's a different style of striker, and we didn't necessarily seem to know what to do with him.
Yeah, he did drop quite deep, though, didn't he? I mean, for a guy that you want playing on the shoulder of the defenders, he tended to drop quite deep and wide, yeah, at times. And I wonder whether that was part of the instruction or whether it was just him looking to get involved, which then contributed to the lack of definitive attacking shape.
I think that is something he habitually does. And actually, when we've been at our best with him at the centre-forward, probably was when we had Alexis behind him, who is a guy who's prepared to run beyond him when he does that. Mm. And we didn't necessarily have that on Saturday. So when he did drop into those wide areas or into midfield, we lacked that focal point up front. And as soon as Giroud came on, you saw a massive difference, I think, in the way we went about the game.
He is one fucking sexy bastard on the pitch at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He was just outstanding, because even late on, I think it was as the second half of injury time was coming into the final minutes, there were a couple of times where he just held the ball up over on the right hand side, you know, held off a couple of defenders, made a simple pass, and that's the kind of thing that you want that player to do in those circumstances. It was exactly what you want him to do. There's, like, I don't know whether whether it's a maturity thing, but there seems to be a more intelligence to his play at the moment.
I think confidence as well, obviously. Yeah. That's a massive factor. But, yeah, you know, I think we obsess that players improve until they're about 25 and then they stay the same. And Giroud is someone who constantly disproves that, because he's not a guy who's reliant on pace. The mental aspect of his game is always progressing, it seems, and you've got to give him enormous credit for that. Mm. I mean, he's obviously been a massive player for us this season, and if he played like this across the whole campaign, he'd be a contender for our player of the season.
Yeah.
But yeah, the difference he made was massive, and I just feel that the way we're set up is kind of dependent on him being that sort of number nine figure at the moment.
Mm. Okay, so two goals for Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah.
I mean, record books will show that he's a guy who got us two goals in a semi-final to take us through to the final. I mean, I don't think it was his best performance by any means, but then that's neither here nor there when he's got that amount of end product.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, it doesn't sort of surprise you that it was him who stepped up and got the goals. And the first one I thought was really well taken, I have to say, that little shimmy inside the box.
Oh, the pass.
Obviously a hell of a pass. I think I'm right in saying that I think there were nine defenders behind the ball when Ozil made that pass, and yet he managed to pick out, you know, the one Arsenal guy in the small, you know, corner.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because do you remember when we did the Arscast Extra live and we were talking with Philippe and Amy about the relationships that players have on the pitch, that Pires knew where Henry was going to be, Henry knew where Bergkamp was going to be, Bergkamp knew what Ljungberg was going to do in terms of the runs. Because when you look at a still of that that shot just before he makes the pass, he obviously knows that Alexis is going to make a run into that area.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever about the sheer skill of being able to put that ball in exactly the right place, the fact that he knew he was going to do it, I think is really interesting, because it speaks to a development of the relationship between the two of them. Because, you know, they really only have been playing together for a few months, because Ozil spent so much time out injured. At the start of the season, you know, they were trying to find a way perhaps to play together, but that is an illustration that, right, look, this is a relationship that's really developing in a positive way.
Yeah, I mean, I forget the word Mertesacker used. Was it automatism, something
that's
like that?
That's it, yeah.
That kind of synchronicity and understanding between players that is so important, and I think that has been developing in the side in recent weeks, and maybe by changing the fullbacks, you know, we robbed ourselves of some of that.
Mm.
But, yeah, I mean, an incredible pass, an incredible moment of magic from Ozil. Brilliant to see him do it on a big stage like that. And yeah, Alexis, you know, both the goals. And I think it was a little bit like those games at the start of the season where Arsenal didn't play particularly well but were bailed out by, you know, moments of individual skill from him. I think it reminded me of those winter months, to be honest with you. And it's good that he's coming back into goal scoring form, because we've got a big 6 weeks ahead of us now.
Sure do. Great stat from Orbino this morning. Mesut Ozil created 9 chances on Saturday, which is the most in an FA Cup game this season, beating his own season high of 8 versus Middlesbrough. I mean, he set up the chance for Ramsey to hit the post, the chances for Gabriel. His set-piece delivery was absolutely superb.
Mm.
Gabriel, interesting that he seems to be quite an attacking guy when he gets into the box. Which is a nice thing to have. I think Giroud hit the post as well late on. So fine stuff from Mesut Ozil. Any sympathy for Adam Federici?
I'll be honest, I do have a little bit. I did feel for him, because I thought he had a really good game and made a couple of excellent saves. Mm. But, you know, pardon me. But, you know, at the same time, primarily my emotion was one of relief. I think that the sympathy is sort of, you know, an afterthought for me. What about you?
No, not really. I mean, you know, he doesn't seem like a bad guy or anything like that, and he did play very, very well. I thought the save from Gabriel, the header, was excellent.
Yeah, that's a great save.
The early save from Mertesacker was pretty good as well. But, you know, look, shit happens. It's football. Obviously, there are players and goalkeepers who I prefer to see that happen to, but in the circumstances of an FA Cup semi-final, you know, it's heartbreaking. We know it's heartbreaking. We've been there. We've seen goalkeeping errors in the past that have cost us trophies, and, you know, it's really not very nice, but, you know, my sympathy's not going to do him any good whatsoever, so I won't waste my time.
What did you just sort of thought on the game? What do you make of the continued use of Aaron Ramsey on the right hand side of midfield? How do you think that's working out for the team?
I don't think it worked particularly well with Debuchy.
Right.
Maybe Ramsey and Bellerin works quite well together. I don't know if Debuchy had the energy to complement Ramsey, but I don't think Ramsey played particularly well. You know, he's asked to do a job out there. I don't think he really enjoys it. I mean, he said on TV last week that he doesn't enjoy it terribly, but he'll do the job because that's what he's asked to do. And I think maybe when you play really well, when the team plays really well, it's not so much an issue. But when it doesn't perform, it doesn't quite click, then you've got to look at it as part of the reason why. I guess interesting that he gave Theo Walcott a little bit of a run out.
Yeah, it was actually, because we got ourselves into a position whereby I wasn't sure if we would use that third sub, because we had Debuchy on the field playing his first game back and we were looking at 120 minutes. So I wondered if he would have to be the guy to come off at some stage. But Walcott got on and, you know, had a couple of decent runs. But I wondered with Ramsey, I just felt against a very packed defence, you know, his inclination's always going to be to drive in field. And without Bellerin on the right-hand side to offer that width, I thought it made us a bit narrow at times. Yeah. So that's be interesting to see what happens with that going forward, because he did well in that position against Liverpool. So it's horses for courses, I suppose.
Yeah. Of course, then the final is going to be against Aston Villa rather than Liverpool.
Yes.
Of course, the whole story was about how the final was taking place on Stevie G's birthday. And this would be his final game for Liverpool after an illustrious career. But once again, Liverpool slipped up, and it's going to be Villa in the final. What do you reckon?
I mean, I'm glad we've avoided that whole circus, to be honest. I think had it an Arsenal-Liverpool final would have been a glamorous occasion, no doubt about it. But I feel it would have been really overtaken and overshadowed by this Gerrard thing. And I saw a couple of people saying on Twitter they worried that, you know, a referee could get caught up in the sentiment of that. And, you know, you do worry a little bit about that kind of thing. So I also think Villa are... You know, if we could pick our opposition, despite the fact we battered Liverpool 4-1 the other day, I think Villa is a kind of better draw for us. You know, they're a team in the lower reaches of the Premier League table who Arsenal will be firm favourites against. So I'm happy with it. What about you?
Well, from a basic point of view, I'm happier because I think Liverpool have more quality overall than Aston Villa. Mm-hmm. Regardless of the fact that we beat them the other week, I just think they've got better players, and therefore it'd be more difficult to win the cup against them. And yeah, I think we're favourites. But, you know, having been here last year, having done it the way that we did it, you can't take anything for granted.
No.
You know, it is a final. That's a bigger occasion than the semi-final, and the semi-final seemed to cause us a little bit of angst, or a little bit of nervous or jitters or whatever it might be. So I think that's going to be true for the final. Villa will go into it as complete underdogs with nothing to lose, and Tim Sherwood will obviously hammer that home into his team that they really have got nothing to lose, and they can have a good go. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But yeah, I'd rather play Villa than Liverpool.
That is true, although the thought of losing to Tim Sherwood really is too much for me to contemplate even. So in some ways it becomes, you know, the stakes are raised even higher. I think losing to him would be, God, a real low point for me as a fan.
You really don't like Tim Sherwood, do you?
I really don't, but through grit and teeth, I must say, I think he's done a decent job of revitalising Aston Villa. I thought there was a really high chance they'd go down, but he's breathed new life into them, and Christian Benteke is playing extremely well, so they'll offer a threat, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But hopefully, I mean, Arsene Wenger versus Tim Sherwood, surely there'll be only one winner.
So
I'm touching all the available wood in my house.
I thought you were going to say touching cloth.
Maybe that as well.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We're going to come back with part two and your questions right after this. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. Part two is where we answer the questions that you sent to us by Twitter at Arseblog and at Gunnerblog. And thank you, as always, for the questions. What I would say is that if you are thinking of submitting a question, we do get quite a number that are similar, because there are various themes and topics that are... what's the word I'm looking for?
Hot topics.
Yes, hot topics. And it's the shit that's going on. But, you know, lots of people sort of come in with the same stuff. So by all means, get creative with your questions, because we do like those.
We do.
We do like those questions. So, yeah, without further ado, then, let's have the first question, and you can go for it, James.
Okay, well, this one is from Dev Guna. At Dev Guna, but to be honest, it's one of those hot themes that we had about a million questions on, so apologies if we didn't use yours. He asks, is how he puts it, was Szczesny really at fault for Reading's goal, or is the reaction more associated with the negativity surrounding him?
I think he was a little bit at fault, yeah. You would have expected him to do better, even though the ball did take a deflection. I think that played a part. Maybe he was a little bit slow to react, and I think he looks like a player who is not feeling it, if you get me. You know, the self-confidence that he has looks to have taken a real blow. I don't know if that's just nerves, if he's finding it difficult to cope without playing regularly, or life out of the team. Maybe he's unhappy with his situation. I don't know what it is. I thought he was pretty okay. For the most part, I thought some of his punching and his stuff from crosses and set pieces was really good.
Yeah,
you know, he got good distance on them, made a couple of good saves. But you know, there's a jitteriness to him at the moment, which you could put down to any number of factors. I think what he really needed was a completely 100% assured performance, not just for his own future, but just probably for his own peace of mind or his own confidence. And he didn't get that, you know. I thought the defending leading up to their goal was poor in general. And the deflection did play a part, but when it sort of bounced up at him, I thought maybe he could have done a bit better. What did you think?
I think it's tough. I mean, it's only sort of, what was it, 7 or 8 yards out, and it does take a nick off Kieran Gibbs. I mean, maybe he could have clawed it away, but I think it's... I don't think it was a huge error by any stretch of imagination. I think had he kept it out, it would have been one hell of a save.
Is it the kind of error... Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually, that it would have been... People would have been talking about it being a great save, but is it the kind of thing that tends to happen to a player in those circumstances?
Maybe,
you know,
yeah.
It seemed almost self-fulfilling prophecy that I should, you know, wash my mouth out and try learn to speak. But, you know, one of those things that when a player is going through that run of form, it seems almost inevitable that something like that will happen.
Maybe. I mean, the reason I like this question as well is because I think that it touches on our perception of a player. And, you know, if a player who's in favour makes a mistake, it's kind of seen as being as unlucky. And if a player's out of favour makes an error, it's, you know, it's proof of their ineptitude. I thought Chesney did all right. I didn't think he was great. I didn't think he was, you know, he certainly didn't do enough to threaten David Ospina's place in the Premier League based on that one performance. Mm-hmm. Which I suppose begs the question. I mean, a lot of people ask this as well. Assuming that he won't play between now and the final, let's have the first round of which goalie should play the final. Who do you think's in pole position to start that game?
I had this question next from Tim Hardwick at Arcelona, and of course many other people have asked this question. Which keeper would you play in the final? He says, for me, Ospina all day. My thought on it is very similar to the thought on it that I had last season. That when you're in a cup final, you play your best team.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I thought Wojciech Szczęsny should have played in the cup final last season. I suppose there's a slight difference this time around in that Fabianski played a big part in getting us there with a penalty shootout. And I thought he was very good maybe in the game against Liverpool? He made some really good saves in that game. This time around, you wouldn't say that Szczęsny's performances in the FA Cup have contributed hugely to us getting to the final. But ultimately, my belief in this, regardless of my own preference for the goalkeeper, is that if you're in a cup final, you want to play your best team to give yourself the best chance of winning the game. If David Ospina is playing week in, week out for Arsenal and performing well and keeping Wojciech Szczęsny out of the team on a weekly basis in the Premier League, then he should play in the cup final because that is the goalkeeper that will give us the best chance of winning the game. Simple as that.
So, as last season, I think I agreed with you on this, and that was my take too. So I suppose my follow-up question would be, having set that precedent by playing Fabianski ahead of Szczęsny last year, even though Fabianski's future lay elsewhere, do you see Wenger changing that policy in order to keep Ospina in the side for the final against Aston Villa?
No.
No, me neither.
No, I think he set a precedent last season that means now that, well, I don't know, it all depends. Maybe he was just really confident in Fabianski. Maybe he saw Fabianski as a kind of a good look charm in a way because he played so well in the rounds, you know. But I think he's it's a weird one because Chesney could go in the summer. We could be in exactly the same position where we're playing a goalkeeper in a final whose future is not at Arsenal. And I know people might say, well, look, that's kind of ridiculous. But I think you've got to trust in the professionalism of the players. That when you're in a cup final, all you're focused on and all you're interested in is the cup final. It's not going to make you, or the fact that you might be going somewhere else won't be part of it.
Well, perhaps especially if you missed out last year.
Yeah.
Be more focused than anyone. I do wonder, I mean, talking about that and looking at last year and examining that decision to play Fabianski ahead of Chesney, do you think there was something in that at that time? Do you think that was a foreshadowing of Chesney's eventual demotion?
No,
you don't think there was any doubt about him on that occasion?
I don't think there was doubt about him. I think he just said, I've played Fabianski in the cup every round and we're in the final, so I'll stick with him. He clearly thought Chesney was a better goalkeeper because he played him every week in the Premier League. What you might ask is whether or not that decision to play Fabianski in the final ahead of Chesney has, I won't say annoyed Chesney, but whether that, you know, has caused him to be a bit cheesed off or whatever. I mean, he looks happy on the day and everything else, but, you know, when you're the number one goalkeeper at a club, and the club has reached its first final in however many years, and it's won its first trophy in however many years, do you really feel part of it if you've sat on the bench? You know, that's not to say he wouldn't be delighted, of course, and he is, and he's been at Arsenal since he was 15, so he's got a real connection with the club, so of course he'd be happy, and his teammates, he'd share in that with them, but he surely would have preferred to play, and would have thought, perhaps, as the number one goalkeeper in a final, you know, that would be the decision. So whether that's had an impact on his outlook or attitude or anything like that, I don't know. But, you know, it's a question worth asking.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing to say is, as I remember it, the decision to play Fabianski on the day certainly didn't look like a masterstroke, you know, 10 minutes into the game. When defensively we were all at sea, and I remember him late on charging out of his goal as well in a real heart-in-mouth moment. So, you know, despite the fact that we won, the selection of Fabianski wasn't necessarily a roaring success.
No, and especially when you consider that we played Hull a few weeks before, and in the first 10, 15 minutes of that game, at their place, they were quite threatening from a number of set pieces and corners. And the way that we dealt with that was with our goalkeeper, that Chesney was very good that day, really solid, came and caught and punched and got rid of all these high balls into the box. And that was where we fell down in the final. You know, the set pieces and crosses were what cost us. Look, it's all water under the bridge at this stage, and obviously it's great because we won, but look, I think this is going to be one of those that people are going to talk about, and everyone's going to have an opinion about whether it should be Chesney or Ospina. I think most people would suggest at this moment in time, given the form, that Ospina is the obvious choice, which is probably why it'll pick Chesney.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to run and run. We've got 6 weeks for David Ospina to potentially fall from favour, make a couple of errors and see people clamouring for Chesney again or not. Who knows? Mm. One thing I would say is I still think Chesney's a better goalkeeper than Fabianski. So whichever one we go in with, I think we'll be in a stronger position than last year. But it will be very interesting, especially if, you know, Fabianski left the club on very good terms, but I think if Chesney is angling for a move away in the summer, the relationship between him and the club might not be quite as nice, let's say. So will that influence Wenger's decision? It's definitely one that I'm sure will come up plenty in the weeks to come.
No doubt. All right, okay, here's a question. This is from Hazuki-san, at Hazuki-san. And he says, is Debushi's experience or Bellerin's speed and danger going forward more valuable against Chelsea?
It's a really good question. I thought Debushi looked very rusty, I have to say. Understandably so. He's been out a long time. But if you look at the Reading goal, for example, it came down that flank, didn't it? Mm. The cross came in from that side. And I think he'll have been disappointed to have let, I think it was Pogrebniak, get that ball into the box. I think Arsene prefers Debushi. It sees him as the senior man, the man in possession of the position, really. But seeing how rusty he was against Reading, I would definitely have some hesitation throwing him into the side. On the counter to that is that if you look at who Chelsea's left winger is, it's possibly the best football player in the country in Eden Hazard. Mm. Would he be a very sore test for Bellerin? I suspect so. I mean, Bellerin coped quite well with Raheem Sterling the other week, but did end up conceding that penalty to a little bit of trickery. And Hazard's definitely someone who's got the potential to do that to him again. So it's a very close call. I'd probably say on recent form, I'd probably go for Bellerin. But maybe the absence of Mertesacker, if he's not playing on that side of the defence, might push Arsene to go with a bit more experience. Mm. What would your opinion be?
I think the reason he picked Debuchy, aside from whatever little ankle problem Bellerin has got at the moment, I think the reason he picked him for the semi-final was to give him some match sharpness ahead of the Chelsea game. And unless he suffered some really ill effects physically of doing 120 minutes after being out for so long, then I think he'll start against Chelsea. But yeah, I mean, there are pros and cons, obviously. Bellerin is quicker, could possibly cope with Hazard's pace better. I'm not sure how quick Debuchy is, really. He doesn't strike me as that quick. He always looks, maybe it's just me, but he looks kind of heavy-footed or something. I don't know.
Yeah, he's one of those players who it seems like his legs have to move a lot for him to travel.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. But then maybe we've not really seen him at peak physical fitness because he was out early in the season with the ankle problem. He came back, looked a little bit heavy-legged at times, and then got injured again. So it's hard to make any kind of definitive judgment. But I do think that he'll look at Debuchy as the number one right back. And maybe against a team like Chelsea, I think he'll err on the side of solidity ahead of what Bellerin might give us a bit further forward.
Yeah, I think that's possible. Let's hope that those 120 minutes will have done him some good, assuming that there were no repercussions for him.
I suppose we forget as well that they're doing a lot of physical intensive training, on the training ground. It's not as if this is the first time he's ever had a run.
You know.
So,
what did you make of Kieran Gibbs on the other side?
Poor.
Yeah,
really
not great.
Surprisingly poor, to be honest. There was a moment, I think, in the can't remember which half, second half maybe, where, like, he'd given the ball away a couple of times, and then you're looking for him to provide an outlet for the centre half. Could have been Koscielny picked up the ball, and Gibbs is standing like ahead of the Reading player, like way up on the left hand side. And I think it was Ozil or Alexis who dropped back in to pick up the ball. Now I don't know if that's instructions that Gibbs was operating under, but it just reminded me a little bit of some of the stuff that Walcott does sometimes, that he's there, but he surrounds himself with players, so he's not an option, you know. And I think that's down to lack of confidence as much as anything else from Gibbs. He's clearly lost his place as the number one right back to Nacho Monreal, and that's a bit of a turn-up given the way the season started. He hasn't played for a month, so there's a little bit of an excuse there. But when you are in that position, when you haven't played for a month and you're given a chance, you know, this is your time to really step up and remind the manager of what you can do. And I don't think he did that at all.
No, I don't think so either. And I think rustiness is kind of valid. I think it was his first start since kind of the beginning of March, so that explains it a bit. But Monreal will be very secure in his position. I don't think there's any doubt about who will play against Chelsea. Another question. This is from Adam G. Becker, and he asks, has Alexis's season been what you expected? Did you realise he was going to be this good?
Not sure it was a case of realising. I was hoping Because there are all these factors that you have to take into account. Is a player coming to a new club, relationships on the pitch that we've spoken about earlier on, new language, new culture, new lifestyle. Certainly there's a big difference between living in Barcelona and living in London. Even from a climate point of view, you know, there are so many things that that can weigh on a player's form and fitness and outlook and mindset and confidence and all those kind of things. But at the same time, you know, I think it was obvious fairly early on that he's a guy who just loves playing football. And I don't think that he lets anything get in the way of that. So that made it easier for him to settle in. I mean, 22 goals. I had to write something for ESPN last week about Alexis and whether he should be up there for player of the season. And I think he should be. But they were one of the questions was, where do you put him in terms of, you know, first seasons at a club in comparison to Henri, comparison to Bergkamp, etc., etc. Those kind of comparisons are obviously quite spurious. But Henri scored 26 goals in his first season at Arsenal. I think Bergkamp scored 11, maybe something, 11, right. 12, something like that. So he's got 22. We've got six games left to play plus an FA Cup final. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that he could outdo what Thierry Henry did in his first season at the club, which would be absolutely fantastic. Whether he can go on and continue to do that season after season remains to be seen, obviously, but it's been a brilliant season. I think he's been absolutely fantastic. That he had a little bit of a lull in the middle is only to be expected, and he earned that, I think. And even when he wasn't scoring, he was contributing. He's a player that defences are scared of simply because he's capable of getting you goals. And whether it was what I expected, I think when you spend that much money, there is a level of expectation from a player. To a certain extent. But no, I'm nothing but delighted with what he's done.
Yeah, I think when you spend £35 million on a player, that does come with a certain degree of expectation. And the greatest thing I think that you could say about Alexis is that no one would ever question that price tag. No one would ever think, did they overpay? Was it worth it? He's absolutely delivered on his billing as a marquee player immediately as well. I think that's what's most impressive. You know, we're seeing great stuff from Mesut Ozil now, but it did take some time for him. Whereas Alexis, with his style of play and his attitude and his sheer physicality at times, was able to step straight into the team and become a key player, you know, from the moment he stepped on the field. And I think he has been fantastic, and I think he can get better as well as he integrates with our team play, because if there is a downside to Alexis, it's that he's got that individual streak. He's not always the most fluent in terms of, you know, keeping the ball. And he's got better in that regard over the course of the season. But I think with a full preseason behind him, knowing his teammates even more, developing this relationship with Ozil, he can get better still. So, yeah, I think he's been great.
All right. This isn't a question for you so much as other listeners. This comes from @DonkeyAdams. We'll just fit this in. He's saying, cheeky question. Could you or your listeners recommend anywhere to watch the Chelsea game in Las Vegas? So if anyone has an answer, it's @DonkeyAdams. @DonkeyAdams. And he wants to watch the Chelsea game in Las Vegas. Surely they have them on in all the casinos. You know.
I'm sure people will be betting on it, no doubt.
Yeah, so there you go. I don't know, but I've never been to Las Vegas.
The only I was there experience recently.
Oh, you were, yeah.
I was, but not for an Arsenal game, so I don't know. I had no plans to watch a match there.
Right.
But I'm sure, I know there is a group, possibly on Twitter, called Las Vegas Gooners or something of that ilk, so I'm sure they'll be in touch.
Yeah, all right. And here's another question then. This one comes from @PastoBaldo. @PastoBaldo1, actually. Because there must have been another PastoBaldo, which is interesting. But he says, I have not stopped laughing at Liverpool's result yesterday. What is your most amusing moment of the season so far?
Oh, great question. I did find yesterday quite funny, I have to say. Just because I found the whole Gerrard narrative slightly sickly. And so, you know, to see it come apart in such a way, it amused me. I think Harry Redknapp's resignation and then saying it was to do with his knees and then returning a couple of months later with claims of a conspiracy at QPR against him was quite funny. I had a lot of time for that. It was just sort of so predictable and so classic Redknapp. What about you? Have you got anything? I'm just thinking.
Well, I mean, I think the Steven Gerrard Manchester United thing was really very funny. Having come on at halftime as a substitute and then get sent off within 60 seconds.
That was pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Like, really, genuinely laugh out loud. Holy shit, that's just too funny. You couldn't script that, you know.
No, I mean, even when we seem to have players sent off with unerring regularity, kind of in the late 90s, I don't think we managed anything quite so spectacular as that.
Yeah. I think also the Frank Lampard goal against Chelsea for Man City.
Yeah.
That was funny too. Like, especially his "I'm not celebrating this" face. That was funny.
That was good. I mean, Danny Welbeck scoring at Old Trafford was pretty funny.
That was good.
I enjoyed that. And actually, Louis van Gaal's post-match interview after the Chelsea game this weekend with the BBC is worth a watch.
If you haven't seen that, it's got to be on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah.
But man, that was quite bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah, really strange. He sort of goes into this very, well, I was going to say passive-aggressive, but it's mainly aggressive.
Yeah.
Mode of answering questions where he just kind of stares out the reporter with his very intimidating flat face. It's like an upturned iron. And it's amusing to watch. Definitely want to see it. I think he was a little bit annoyed at his former protege, Jose Mourinho, getting one over him.
I think he might well have been. Because I didn't think, you know, sometimes a manager can get really annoyed at a question because it's a stupid question. But I don't think there was anything in the line of questioning from the reporter that merited the response that Van Gaal gave him. I find him, I have to say, a little bit scary.
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't like to be alone with him anywhere.
No, there is something about him that I feel like he looks a bit like a serial killer in my head.
Mm.
It's something about his hair, I think, as well. He's got this very immaculate hair that's sort of far too good for a man of his own age. Do you know what I mean? It's very well kept. But I think that vanity makes me think that he might be a murderer.
So do you think that could be a wig?
Look, I'm just putting it out there.
Right.
It's very suspicious to me.
Well, yeah, no, I certainly wouldn't be at all surprised if there was a darkness to his past or even his present. You know,
indeed. And I can sort of set, whenever you look at sort of Ryan Giggs kind of inverted commas celebrating with him on the touchline, you can sense Giggs's mistrust of Van Gaal. I do think that they've brought in a bit of a lunatic. And obviously,
well, you know, Giggs knows all about people who are
deceptive.
Yes.
That is the word. And obviously, you know, they've had a lot of success with psychos on the touchline at Old Trafford. I think, yeah, he's an intriguing character, but do check out that interview if you haven't seen it. It's definitely worth a watch.
Mm.
Time for one more?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, I don't know what it's going to be. I'm literally just scrolling through now. Oh, okay, I quite like this. This is from Drake Gunner.
I hope he's recovered from his Madonna experience.
Well, let's hope so. And he says, "I'm glad it didn't go to penalties on Saturday, but which five Arsenal players, past or present, would you pick for a shootout?"
Okay, good question. Thierry Henry?
Yeah.
Lee Dixon?
Oh, I didn't think of that. Okay.
Robert Pires?
Good choice.
This is going to sound a weird one, but every time I saw him take a penalty, he was really good. Ashley Cole.
He was really good. And he was good for England as well.
Yeah.
Because he has no feelings, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. No, he's not scared of missing, so he just, like, clumps
it into
the corner. Yeah, he's very good. Van Persie took a good penalty too, but I'm not going to choose him. So how many have I got now? Four?
You've got four. Right. I've got one in my head that I would consider.
I think I would take... let's just say someone from the current team who I'd feel confident, Santi Cazorla.
Strikes the ball well.
Yeah.
Unless it's in open play, in which case it'll just go over the bar.
Yeah. That's like so bizarre, isn't it?
It's really weird. It's really weird.
For a guy of his technique and touch and quality, that the couple of the chances that he had on Saturday against Reading from the positions that he had them in, you're thinking, come on, man. You saw that video, didn't you, with Monreal, where they were kicking that, like,
Up
and down the gym, and Cazorla's just like, touch, kick, and Monreal's like making it difficult for him, and Cazorla just looks at the ball, and it drops onto his foot, and he kicks it back, and, you know, it's weird that his finishing has been so off this season, apart from the penalty spot.
Mm. Well, I would go for, who would I have that you haven't got? I think I'd have Lauren.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you know what? He'd give you heart attacks.
He would, but his penalties are the funniest penalties.
They are. That one against Tottenham was right up there with one of the funniest of all time.
Absolutely outrageous. Is there anyone we've missed? I mean, obviously Dennis Bergkamp conspicuous by his absence for obvious reasons. I think he swore never to take another one, didn't he, semi-final miss?
That's surprising, isn't it, for a guy of like his quality and intelligence and...
He knows what he likes. He knows what he doesn't like, and he doesn't like penalties, and he doesn't like aeroplanes.
Yeah, but that's true. But you know, you'd think that he'd be able to rationalize it in his head that, like, hang on a second, I'm fucking Dennis Bergkamp. I'm not just some dude who was called out of the crowd to take a penalty. I'm Dennis Bergkamp, so I will, you know, just score the next one with my excellent feet and quality and everything.
I mean, everybody misses. With the possible exception
of missed a penalty from time to time.
I find that hard to believe.
I know.
He doesn't really count. I mean, I suppose we can have past and present. I'd quite like to see Podolski take a penalty.
Did we ever see that?
I'm not sure we did. Maybe we did once, but I don't know. I have a vague recollection of him taking one. I don't know, but think he'd have a good chance of breaking the net with that kind of run out, you know? Mm.
Yeah, so or hitting the ball out of the ground.
I mean, that's the
waddling it into space, I think, is the official term.
Again, I'm mainly thinking about penalties that I would find amusing to see.
Yeah,
and I might get Kim back, Kim Kjellstrom. That was a pretty sweet penalty in the semi-final.
Yeah, certainly was.
The dead ball specialist.
Yeah.
So that I'd probably throw them into the mix. But I don't feel like we've been blessed with like great takers, even some of the ones like Van Persie, who were very good technically. You still, you know, there were still a couple of high profile misses, but
were there? I can't really remember.
One I always remember is the Milan one. Do you remember the 3-0 when we were trying to overturn?
Yeah, did 4-0? He miss a penalty?
Have I made that up?
Yeah, it wasn't a penalty. It was like the keeper came out. He tried to do a little dinky thing over the keeper, and a little bit too clever for his own good.
I'm sorry, Robin. I'm not sorry, Robin, at all.
No, never apologise.
Oh, God, what have I done? I don't know. Let's just pretend he did miss a penalty.
Wanker.
Yeah.
Fucking bottling cunt.
Exactly, yeah. There we go.
All right. Well, look, those are our penalty takers. And that's it for this week's Arscast Extra. Big game coming up this weekend now. Chelsea, of course, your brother. You're looking for the... to complete the set here.
Well, that's it.
I obviously had the joy of beating them. Liverpool, I mean.
Indeed. We dismissed the Mug Smashers, and now it's time for my brother. Let's see. I mean, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah. I think we're going to win.
Do you, really?
Yeah.
I was confident, but the nature of Chelsea's secure position makes me think they will come and just play for a 0-0, and they're probably very proficient at doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll park the bus and try and hit us on the break, etc., etc. But, you know, I think the couple of goals Alexis will score will be enough.
Okay, well, let's hope so.
Both assisted by Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, lovely. Right.
Well, we'll look ahead to that game on the Arscast regular on Friday. And, of course, next Monday, we'll be here to discuss everything that happens at the weekend and that fabulous win over Chelsea. So until the next Arscast Extra, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.